we were wrong. She nodded, started up again. Detective Peabody, may I say your hair is quite fetching. Peabody grinned back at Somerset. Yeah? Thanks. She had to quick time it to catch up with Eve and the cat. What the hell flashes in a pan? Eve demanded. I don't actually know. See? See? That's why that kind of stupid saying doesn't make any sense. Now I have to look it up. Peabody pulled out her PPC as she followed Eve. Oh, it's from flintlocks. You know, muskets. And they have these little pans for the gunpowder. And if it went off without the bullet or the ball thing, the gunpowder just, well, flashed in the pan. And that makes it make sense? Well, sort of. Not really, Peabody decided. Eve turned into her office. Update the board. I'll do the book. Get coffee or whatever if you want it. I'm coffeed out, and hoping you have low-cal fizzies. As Peabody headed into the kitchen and the auto chef, Eve sat at her command center. Score! Peabody called from the kitchen. And there's Yancey. He's just finished. He'll be here within 15. Peabody came out with a fizzy for herself, a black coffee for Eve. I'm looking at this board, Peabody said as they worked, and the connections between the Huffmans and the Wilkies. It goes back. I'm sort of surprised the families didn't arrange for one of the Wilkie sons to marry Gwen. You don't expand your membership or your treasury that way. They wanted the Kane money and hoped, more assumed, I think, Gwen would draw merit into the order. And all the while, she planned to use him to hit the terms of the trust, then set him up so she could divorce him with their approval and support. Eve glanced up, frowned. She knew all that, had gone over and over that, but something new wanted to click. And Yancey came in. Hey, Peabody, Dallas. Hey, Yancey, how'd the wits do? He paused by Peabody and the board to answer her. Solid as it gets. I ran facial rec on the sketch while I was there, and pop, they confirmed ID. Pedophile, on parole after doing 14 years in. He's out 3 months and tries to snatch a 12-year-old girl walking home from band practice after school. Her mom's looking in a shop window 3 feet away. Kid yells, kicks his nuts. Mom screams, grabs kid, pervert takes off limping. I got word on the way over. We already picked him up in his flop. Nice work. The kid gets the credit. She says her mom taught her the move. He shifted his gaze from the board to Eve. Peabody might term him ultra-dreamy, with his mop of curly dark hair and handsome face, but he was, Eve knew, a solid cop. He had a way of easing small details out of a witness, a way of relaxing them into remembering more, then merging those details into a face. So, he smiled at her, first time for us. Have you ever worked with a police artist as a wit? A lifetime ago, she thought. At 8, broken and battered and terrified. She'd been gentle too, as Eve knew Yancey could be. But that traumatized little girl hadn't remembered a single detail of her father's face. It was simpler to hedge. They brought a couple into the academy for training, had us witness a mock attack, then set us up to describe the attacker to the artist. How'd you do? I did okay. I bet. I'm ready when you are. He glanced around. How about we use the table there by the doors? That'll work. Do you want coffee? Eve asked as she rose. I'd rather have one of those fizzies. Peabody tipped hers side to side. This is locale. Skip that part. Make it lemon if you've got it. You guys set up. I'll get the fizzy. You want to fill me in? Yancey asked Eve. Rourke's coming, and McNabb. I'd rather brief everybody at once. Okay. He took off his satchel, then set it down to open it. Peabody delivered his fizzy while he set out his tools. Grab a chair, Peabody. We both got a good look at her. Subject's female. Yancey nodded. Female, 18, Caucasian, ivory skin. Triangular face, on the thin side. She's lost the fresh of 18. It's strain, it shows. Hollows in the cheeks. Not deep, more like somebody who's lost weight in the last couple months. Oval, double-lidded eyes, blue-green, tending toward blue. A little wider than that, she told Yancey as he sketched. More oval. She paused for coffee. Nose is thin, but not sharp. She had a stud in it at one time. I could just see the piercing. Right side. Miss that, Peabody murmured. You were on her left. Just a little wider on the nose. Yeah, that's good. Wide mouth. Wide with a full top lip, a slight overbite. Eyebrows. Forgot the eyebrows. Eve closed her eyes, brought them back. Thick. Slight arch. Medium brown. Long lashes, medium brown. Ears close to the head. Triple piercings on both. Two in the lobes, one up in the cartilage. Lobes a little longer than that. Rourke came in, silent as a cat. He caught the drift, said nothing, and continued to her command center to get his own coffee. Medium brown hair, length undetermined. She wore it pulled back, and from the thickness of the roll at the back of her neck, I'm gonna guess about Peabody's length, maybe slightly longer. Eve studied the sketch. Bring the mouth in a hair, and a little fuller on the bottom lip, a little more narrow on the forehead. As Yancey made minute adjustments, Peabody shook her head. That's her! That's excellent! Yancey looked at Eve. Any changes? No, that's solid. You make my job easy. Not done yet. Second woman, Peabody. Take it. Oh, shit! Relax. Yancey gave her his easy smile. This won't hurt a bit. Eve left them to it and head nodded Rourke into the kitchen. I'm gonna go over all this when McNabb gets here, so I only have to say it once. All right. He leaned in, kissed her. You'd object to that once we're in cop mode. I'm still in cop mode. I don't know how long this is gonna take. Understood. Just tell me this before we begin. What did you think of Stanton Wilkie? Eve bared her teeth. I want to bury the bastard. All right, then. Let's get started on making that happen. 15. When they stepped back out, Eve saw Yancey guiding Peabody through the process. Giving them room, Eve listened, nodded in approval. Her partner rolled into it. Miriam Wilkie, Eve murmured to Rourke. Wilkie's daughter. She said she had a place in the city. How about you find that for me? Happy to. I'll just use your command center as you're itching to add some details to Peabody's description. Okay, maybe, but I want her to do it, and she's doing better than okay. Rourke took her chair anyway as she began circling the board. She heard McNabb's prance approaching and stepped out of the office. He pranced beside Feeney. Didn't expect you. I gave the boy a ride, and I didn't want to miss all this. I sure as hell can use you. Peabody's working with Yancey, so keep it zip, detective. Got it. Go get coffee, fizzies, whatever the hell. They're close to finished. While they headed in and straight to the kitchen, Eve wandered to the table to look at the sketch. What have I missed? Peabody asked her. Not much. It's solid. But something. Yancey really takes you back, but I feel like I'm not right there. Her complexion's a little more sallow, and she has some sag under the chin. That! The sag! The eyes are good, except she had little pockets, not bags, just little pockets under them. And she got a deep line between her eyebrows when she concentrated on pouring the tea. It's left a more shallow one from pulling her brows together over the years. I keep reminding myself not to do that. Peabody rubbed her fingers between her eyebrows. That's her. That's good. She's about 50. Looks older by a few years. No work, no makeup, but about 50 if you factor that. You can run facial rec on this one, Yancey. Not the younger one. You can try it, but they wiped her data, so it's next to zero you'll hit anything. I want to see if they did the same with the older woman. I'll run it now. Nice working with you, Peabody. You got sharp skills. I'll brief everybody while that runs. Rolling into what felt like real progress, Eve turned. Everybody grab a seat. You can brief over pizza, Rourke said. Your troops need a meal, Lieutenant. She wanted to object, maybe would have, but he'd said the magic word. Pizza. Fine. McNabb, help me set up a table. Peabody, would you order up what suits? I'm all over it and back. Hit, Yancey allowed, and had Eve moving back to him and looking over his shoulder. Let's get it up on screen. I'm not on your system. To solve that, Rourke stepped over. If you wouldn't mind. With Yancey's assent, Rourke took his portable, synced it, and threw the data to Eve's wall screen. Okay, here's Gail Steinberg, Eve began. Age 52, Caucasian, married to Carl Steinberg, age 55, since 2034. Two offspring, both male. And the residence listed for the last 15 years is Natural Order's Connecticut HQ. Employed by Natural Order as a domestic/domestic trainer at an annual income of $125,000. She caught the scent of pizza. Okay, fine, she thought. She could eat. And she had to bring everybody up to date before they could really dig in. Go ahead, set up the food. I'm going to start a deeper run. I want to find out when she joined the order, if her husband and offspring are members. Yancey, if you need to take off, you're clear. If you want a stick, I'll fix it. I'd like to help find her. The first one. I'd like to know who she is. And there's pizza. You'll earn it. She went to her command center, set up the runs. When Rourke came over, kissed the top of her head, she was too engrossed to be embarrassed. Come, grab a slice with your team. You'll be the better for it. It's more of a team than I figured on. And I think we're going to need to add to it before this is done. While she worked, they set up a long table to hold several pies, the plates, the soft drinks, fizzies, coffee. They'd expanded the table where she and Rourke usually had dinner. brought in chairs. He'd told her before they'd remodeled how it would work when she had a team at home, and as usual, he'd been right. Right now, everyone talked at once while they stuffed pizza in their faces, guzzled drinks. And somewhere along the line, Rourke had shed his tie, his suit jacket. He didn't look like a cop, but he sure looked at ease with them. She grabbed a slice and, moving back to the board, took a bite before she began. "I'm going to start with Ariel Byrd." Rourke watched her while she ate with one hand, gestured to the board when necessary with the other. Facts, evidence, timelines, names, and connections all laid out in brisk cop speak. Commanding, he thought. She managed commanding, even with a half-eaten slice of pepperoni pizza in her hand. He watched the others as well. Peabody, nibbling slowly on her slice to make it last while she listened. McNabb, already on his second slice, tapped his air boots to some inner rhythm. Yancey, whom Rourke assumed had come in only tonight, ate with one hand, took notes with the other. And Feeney, taking a pull from a cream soda, kept his eyes on the board, ate absently as Eve did, putting things together, Rourke concluded, as Eve had. She went back for more pizza as she moved into her interviews, beginning with Tribeca. "My sense is that entire block, a good 24 townhomes and duplexes, is occupied by members. We'll verify that and verify if the order itself owns the real estate." "They do." Rourke glanced up from his PPC. "As I've just checked that for you, those 26 residential properties, double that for occupancy as each is a duplex, are owned by Utopian Estates, a real estate and development arm of Natural Order." "Gotcha another." A tiny drop of sauce plopped on Feeney's shit brown tie as he ate and worked. "Just a quick scan, but I don't find a single 911 call, not for cops, medical, fire, on that block in the last 24-month period. I can look back more, but it says something."
"Yeah, it does," Eve agreed.
"It says if they have any problems, they handle it internally or tag up somebody from Natural Order to handle it."
"Creepy," Peabody put in. "The whole block had a seriously creepy vibe."
"The Pipers pay $3,000 in rent, which is very low for the location and square footage, I see." Lawrence Piper, a vice president of the Order's social media division at their headquarters, has an annual reported salary of $632,000.
"There's more there," Rourke added. "Unreported bonuses, perhaps, considering the vehicle he owns, a vacation property and boat, and what I'm seeing here at, as Feeney said, a quick scan, a taste for the finer things."
"Keep the rent low, keep them in line, hold the block." "We had a different vibe, different take with Adina Frank in the East Village." She ran them through the interview. Rourke listened, even as he did multiple runs and searches on his portable. He added the Grimsleys to his list when she got to Soho, but he'd already satisfied himself on a few points. He'd refined them considerably, he thought, with more time. When she outlined the visit to Natural Order and the Wilkies, the mood changed. McNabb's boots stopped tapping. Feeney's face went cop blank. Yancey paused in his note-taking to study the faces on the board as if to imprint them.
"I want to take a minute, if that's chill."
McNabb stood when she finished.
"Can I open those doors?"
"Yeah, go ahead. I guess we can all use some air after that." "They start them at age 5. Yancey consulted his notes.
That's what Edina Frank stated. At age 5, kids are required to attend an approved school and begin indoctrination. Correct. It probably starts younger, but that's official and regimented. We've got threads, Eve continued, leading from Bird's murder to natural order. A lot of threads, but no strong knots to tie them to it. We've also got a federal agent who infiltrated and has gone dark, a missing person who, according to his sister, began gathering data to expose some aspects of the order. And we have Ella Alice Fox, who, by all appearances, is inside those gates against her will, who had her identity wiped. Eve crossed over, took a tube of Pepsi, cracked it. Feeney and or McNabb can brief us on the recorder placed in Gwen Huffman's link, but the questions are who put it there and why? To trackers, certainly. And whoever did knew about the affair and her orientation. Did this individual kill Bird to protect Huffman from exposure? If so, why? Who stands as protector and why? Natural order gains more if she's cut off by her parents, but they'd risk embarrassment. Her parents are longtime prominent members about to put on a big society wedding and merge with another prominent and wealthy family they hope to draw into the order. So do they take the money now, let the Huffmans deal with some humiliation, have the daughter cut off, or, Rourke continued, do they guard their investment, look to the future? It's a bit of a gamble. But the Canes are worth quite a bit. They're going to cash in either way, right? Yancey looked from Rourke to Eve. And you factor in they eliminated a lesbian. It's not hard to see how they justify that. And mixed race, too. So, well, two strikes. That's how I see it. The killer planned enough to plant the recorder, but the murder, that was spur of the moment. Cold, but impulsive. The timeline tells us that. Bitch is gonna screw up this merger. That's what it was to them, a merger. Beyond the racism, the bigotry, the misogyny, and all the rest, Natural Order's a big, fat business, and its business is money, power, and control. It's kids, too. McNabb stepped back in. That's the future, guaranteed. Huffman's been groomed for this, right? She'd been caught once being herself, and re-a-fucking-lined. She's been smart enough to play along, and greedy enough, too. But her purpose, according to this goddamn cult, is to marry the rich white guy and pop out some rich white kids. Their dad, their grandparents, are more likely to go along once there are kids. Even if not, the kids are going to have trust funds. That's the culture. But you can't get there if Bird rings the bell. We have to tie that thread to the order and knot it tight. The order has big piles of money, and big piles of money buy lots and lots of lawyers. They're going to have some judges, some politicians, and, I hate to say it, some cops on their rolls. They do have considerable wealth, Rourke said. Still, a great deal of it's tied up in real estate. The Tribeca properties, for instance. The rent doesn't quite cover the taxes, the maintenance. There's depreciation, of course, and other ways, but they take a loss on those properties. And I've found a handful of others nationally that do the same. The cart drivers said they have a farm system. They have several farms, ranches, orchards, which provide much of their food and resources. I'll look deeper, but they don't seem to be particularly profitable. They provide housing, schools, services for their laborers and staff at minimal rates. Laborers are also paid at minimal rates. When did you get all this? I ran some searches while you were briefing. Shallow at the moment, but enough to give me a sense. And your sense is they're losing money with all this? They are, yes. But then if you want your personal vision to spread, you need teachers to teach that vision, schools and facilities where your natural order is enforced. Someone farms the land, and that puts a little in his pocket, but he's a roof over his head, doesn't he? His children have a free private education teaching the values, so to speak, he subscribes to. She could see it, yes. Eve thought she could see the overall plan. Sort of, to her mind, a long and intricate con. But how do you sustain that and accumulate enough money to buy a freaking island if you're plowing your profits into the ground? They make up for it, and quite well. Members are required to tithe 20% of their income. I suspect, once I scratch a bit more, I'll find fees. Very likely quotas to be met and deductions when they're not. It's very likely many of their wealthier members agree to bequeathing large sums to the order in their wills. They don't have to pay someone like Ella Fox, do they? Eve asked. She's no one. They'd have more no ones. Slave labor. And with all that, Wilkie spends lavishly on a personal level. Several homes, two private shuttles, a jet copter, a yacht, in his name. His older sons each have their own shuttle and two homes each. The younger lives in the house at HQ and or on Utopia Island, according to his data. The daughter said she had a place in the city. Rourke angled his head. There's nothing in her name, but I'll look into it further. Their official data lists their annual salary at about $10 million for Wilkie, $3.6 million for his older sons, $1.2 million for the younger, and the daughter in the mid-six figures. None of those will be near to accurate. So maybe we can toss tax evasion and fraud in there when we bag them. Okay. She took another turn around the board. McNabb, what can you tell us about the recorder on Huffman's link?
The link was damaged in the recycler, so we had to work around that. Lucky for us, the internals, including the tracker, held up with minimal damage. The tracker with recording features is illegal, unauthorized, no ID number, so not law enforcement or military as it's required. I'm going to say no for the spooks and their kind too, because it just wasn't good enough. It's decent, but it's not that caliber. And that's why it's got the echo. It was breaking down. You'd get audio and video, probably clear for the first while. Then the vid would get blurry. The audio echoes.
Can you estimate how long it had been in use?
I'd give it about a year outside, about 9 months inside. I'm figuring that on the amount of use. Huffman used the link for texting and calls, and that's it.
9 months to a year. Eve nodded. She got engaged to Kane last summer, and she met Bird last fall. It fits. All right. Ariel Bird's our priority, but right up with her are Keen Grimsley and Special Agent Anthony Quirk, both missing, and it's not a stretch to presume dead. And Ella Alice Fox alive, and we presume being held against her will. They're tied together, so we make those knots. Peabody, use my auxiliary and start compiling everything you can on Wilkie's two older sons, their wives. I'll take the daughter, the youngest son, and the mother. Yancey, how about you do the same with Gail Steinberg? She's going to be Ella's trainer, her immediate supervisor, or whatever benign term they use for keeper in there. I've got my portable. I can do a run on her, her family on that. Great. You want coffee or whatever? There's an auto chef and a fridgey in the kitchen. Feeney, Rourke, McNabb, I need Ella Fox's data. We'll get it. Feeney scratched the back of his neck. Might take some time, but Rourke's got what we need in his comp lab here. Rourke, the more I know about natural orders and the Wilkie's finances, the better. It's like music to my ears. I'll set that up on auto in the lab while we find young Ella. Let's get to it. Eve settled in, tuned everything else out. She started with the mother. Rachel Lee Wilkie, née Charles, Caucasian, age 51. Pattern, Eve thought. 12 years younger. And married, she noted, for 32 years. She skipped over the offspring, as she already knew, scrolled down to education. And as she expected, Rachel Charles had been a student, Montana U in Missoula, when Wilkie, the roots he'd planted with natural order already dug in and spreading, came to town. From a ranching family, she noted, one with an impressive dude ranch as well as a working one. Wealthy then, and wealthy still. Rachel had a brother, older, who joined the family business. She'd studied animal husbandry before she dropped out to marry Wilkie. 6 weeks from what she could put together after he'd come to her college. Didn't pop a kid out, like McNabb said, right off, though, did she? Eve shut her eyes, did the math. Nope, it took a couple of years. The second, right away, but then a 4-year gap, then another 4 years. Interesting. She dug down into medical records, then sat back. Peabody? Huh? What? Have you looked at medical records on the oldest sons? Not there yet. Look now. Sec. A moment later, Peabody frowned. I'm not finding any. I mean, none. Not sealed, just nothing. Yeah. I've got nothing on Wilkie's wife after their marriage 32 years ago. The standards up to then nothing. She swiveled to face Peabody. Their own hospitals, clinics, doctors, and so on, so no records. Not of injuries, illnesses, meds, treatments, in her case, childbirth, or possible miscarriages or fertility treatments. He said his wife was ill and on the island in treatment. That's right, but what sort of illness? What sort of treatment? Eve did another quick search. Her parents and her older brother are alive and well on the ranch in Montana. Maybe they're members, maybe not. I'm going to find out. I'm about to have a conversation. If you need quiet, I'll take it elsewhere. Peabody sent Eve an amused look. Dallas, I work in the bullpen. Right. She used her desk link, contacted Montana. A man with a short, graying beard and a big-ass cowboy hat filled the screen. New York City? How about that? What can I do for you, Dallas Lieutenant Eve? Mr. Charles? That's right, Morgan Charles. I'm investigating a case, and during the course of the investigation, I found some potential connections to natural order. Everything about him went sour. His eyes, his mouth, his voice. We don't have anything to do with those crazy fuckers. Excuse my language. My data states your sister, Rachel, is married to Stanton Wilkie, who was the head of the order. I know it. I've been sick about it for better than 30 years. It doesn't mean we've got anything to do with it, and I don't much want to talk about it.
I'm sorry to bring up difficult feelings, Mr. Charles. Could you tell me the last time you saw or spoke to your sister?
More than 25 years ago, when they brought their traveling circus to Bozeman. I took my wife and my two kids, had one more after, but two at that point, to see her. I wanted to see my baby sister, to talk to her, to try to mend some fences.
I see.
Do you?
His mouth stayed so tight, a muscle began to twitch in his jaw.
You might see better if I tell you my wife, the love of my damn life, the mother of my children, is Cherokee.
Yes, I do.
And what does she say to me? My own sister, in front of my beautiful wife and boys? She tells me my marriage isn't recognized and my children aren't legitimate. Until I restore order to my life, she won't see or speak to me again. That she'll pray I find my way back.
I'm very sorry.
I took my family home and that's been that. I don't know how that son of a bitch turned my sister into that person I met in Bozeman. I never told my parents about it. They had heartbreak enough. I'd appreciate if you'd honor that.
Yes, sir. She would have had children herself at that time.
Two boys, another on the way. My wife said how hard it must be to have three kids so close together, and maybe that's why she looks so sickly and tired out.
Would you remember what year this was?
Happens I do, or can figure since you ask. Our oldest had his third birthday right before we went to Bozeman. So that would have been November of 35.
Why? Just a detail. I realize these questions are personal, she began.
You aim to tie that son of a bitching Wilkie to some crime in New York City? Put his ass in prison?
Though Eve chose her words carefully, she kept her eyes directly on his.
I'm pursuing all avenues in my investigation.
His jaw loosened as he nodded.
Yep, I got a cousin who's a sheriff around these parts. I know the lingo well enough. There's a chance of it. Ask away.
Did or does your sister have money of her own? I mean hers to access?
She had access to her college money when she took off with that son of a bitch, and she yanked it out before we could do a damn thing about that. Then what does she do? I still pray she wasn't in her right mind.
Heat rolled into his face, fired in his eyes.
She has a lawyer contact our folks. She was to get a share of the ranch when she turned 25, and a bigger share when they pass. The lawyer said she wanted the cash equivalent now. They said no, and the next thing you know, she's suing him for it.
His jaw didn't tighten again, but he looked away, took several seconds to gather himself.
They were going to fight it, but it ripped them to pieces. Tore the heart right out of them. Their own child doing that for money?
They settled it.
Wasn't going to give them the share she'd have gotten when they were in the ground, fuckers. Sorry.
Mr. Charles, I've rarely heard the term used more accurately.
Appreciate it. They offered $5.5 million and she took it. She's never once come to see them, written to them, called them, their own baby girl. Not once in all these years. I don't know what that man does, Ms. Dallas, but he turned my sister into something she wasn't. He does that to people.
That he does, Mr. Charles.
Is my sister... Is she in trouble, too? I don't think she's involved in the matter I'm investigating. I appreciate very much your taking the time to answer my questions. If you have any more, would you come back to me and not my parents? They're feisty enough, but they're getting up there. And this is a hole in their heart. Their girl gone, grandkids they've never met. It's a hole. If there's anything else, I'll come to you. I won't contact them. Thanks for that. I gotta get on. But hey, do you know that New York cop they made that clone vid about? Actually, I... Yes. Sure hope you're as good as she was in the vid and nail that son of a bitch's ass to a splintery wall. Peabody stopped working when Eve clicked off. You let him get away with calling you Ms., not just because you didn't want to interrupt the flow, but because, geez, who wouldn't feel for that guy? For his family? Just another reason I want to nail Wilkie's ass to a splintery wall. She was pregnant, and there's no offspring on record of that year or the next, or until Miriam Wilkie in March of 37. So either she miscarried or had a stillbirth or the child died. And I'm betting that happened with her more than once. Kids guarantee the future. And he'd want a lot of guarantees. She turned back to her screen. Why isn't the daughter married to some rich dude by now? Eve wondered. The click that Yancey's arrival interrupted clicked again. She started her next run. 16. Money, Eve thought as she began looking more deeply into Miriam Wilkie's background and data. Was it all about money? Always a core motive for murder. She'd lived most of her life without it, or with just enough to get through. She'd gone hungry as a child, yes, but that had been a result of cruelty and neglect. She'd never developed a thirst for wealth. But that didn't mean she couldn't understand it, and its sometimes lethal power. Rourke had the thirst, and most of it a result of the cruelty and neglect in his own childhood. He'd stolen to survive, then to quench the thirst. But rather than being driven by that lethal power, he'd held the wheel. He'd never killed for gain. Had Wilkie? Every instinct said yes, oh yes, he had. Maybe, just maybe, not with his own hands, but with words, with his deliberate, calculated, decades-long spread of intolerance, distrust, cool-blooded prejudice delivered behind the mask of faith. He'd raised his flock by giving them not just excuses to hate the other, but the right. He'd certainly raised his children by the same methods. 3 sons, 1 daughter. The daughter received her primary education in natural order schools. No surprise there. She'd earned an MBA from Unity University, Natural Orders Online College. Another degree, same place, in hospitality, and a 3rd in computer science. Were those directives from the father, Eve wondered, or Miriam's own interests and ambitions? And even with those 3 degrees, she'd been relegated to serving her father and running his household. According to her data, she owned no property in her own name, earned a salary considerably less than even her younger brother, her job title, domestic manager. I bet that grates, Eve muttered. Would it grate to know she'd be expected to marry a man approved, maybe selected, by her father, then produce a child every year or two?
Or would that suit her own ambitions? After another 30 minutes of searching, scanning, absorbing, Eve got more coffee. She put her boots up on her command center and studied the board. Studied Miriam Wilkie's ID shot. A young, not unattractive woman who presented herself as plain, wore clothes even Eve recognized as dowdy and unfashionable. An educated woman with 3 degrees and a substantial income who owned nothing. Her older brothers owned homes, vehicles, held important-sounding titles. But not the daughter. It's gotta fucking great. Peabody.
Yeah, I'm about to send you the highlights.
Tell me this. Where did Wilkie's sons go to college?
Stanton Wilkie University.
Eve turned her head from the board to look at Peabody.
Where?
He built a small private college on Utopia Island. All 3 went there. The youngest just graduated. I took a closer look at it. It's males only, and only accepts students who've graduated from approved schools.
They can do that?
Private island, private school. 96% of the graduates go on to work in what they call the Natural Order Network.
Huh.
Computer, search for any and all female-only universities and colleges connected to Stanton, Wilkie, or Natural Order. Global search.
Acknowledged. Working.
You're doing the daughter. Where did she go?
Online. 2 bachelor's degrees and an MBA from his online college.
Search results show no college or university on planet with those parameters.
Because women don't need higher education, Eve concluded.
Plus, it might give them ideas.
He let his daughter get those degrees, but not in a social or open setting because he can use her.
I found some photos of her online with him. Sometimes her mother or her brothers are in them too. Miriam's always in the background. She looks like staff because that's essentially what she is.
Eve drank some coffee.
Wouldn't that bug the shit right out of you?
Me?
Yeah. But it's the way she was raised. It's what she's been taught.
Wouldn't you say the woman we spoke to today on that veranda deal could think for herself? Even had a sense of power and authority?
Yeah, I would. Until her father joined us.
Eve lifted a hand, shot a finger at Peabody.
Exactly. He masks bigotry with benevolence. She masks intelligence with subservience. I think they're both liars.
She looked over at Yancey. Got anything interesting?
I think so, here and there.
Why don't you come over here, bring a chair?
He brought the one he'd been sitting on, and is portable.
I'm gonna let this other Wilkie stuff stew back here for a while.
She waved her hand at the back of her head. Give me what you've got on Steinberg.
Okay. She and her husband didn't join the order until they were in their late 40s. She worked as a domestic. He had a small handyman business. This was outside of St. Paul. Financially, they were underwater more than above. What I put together is Carl Steinberg did some work for a member, and over the course of the job, the member talked up the order. Steinberg already belonged to Freedom Warriors. That's been taken down, but it was a white nationalist group in the Midwest back then, so it was preaching to the choir.
Are you still synced with the screen?
Yeah.
Put Carl Steinberg up there. I like the visual.
When he had, Eve saw a hard-eyed man in his upper 60s going jowly, gravel gray hair in a severe buzz cut.
Split screen Gail Steinberg and keep going.
They look like the mean version of American Gothic, Peabody commented, and Yancey laughed.
They really do. I have to figure the members sponsored the Steenbergs, because that's one way to get into meetings and seminars, and they couldn't afford the orientation and screening fees required otherwise. Sponsored? I set up a fake account and filled in a questionnaire on their website, Yancey told her. The orientation and screening fees are pretty sticky, but they waive the orientation fee if you're sponsored by a member in good standing who's been in for a minimum of 3 years. That's good work, Yancey. Good thinking. He shrugged. You get curious. 6 months after they joined, Steenberg closed his business, and they went to work at a natural order center. Maintenance for him, domestic for her. A few years later, they packed up, moved to Kansas. They worked on the order's Heartland Farm, and their kids went to the farm school. 5 years after that, they moved to the HQ in Connecticut. Their kids didn't. What happened there? The address I got for both kids at the time of that move was back in St. Paul. Maternal grandparents. Both had reached 18, so the Steenbergs couldn't legally stop them. Both still live in that general area. The oldest one's a cop with St. Paul's PSD. Is that so? It's an hour earlier there, so I went ahead and reached out. Detective Leroy Russ. Both of them changed their last name legally to their grandparents. I'll have it all in the report, but to sum it up, he said his father was a vicious brute and his mother no better. And natural order's full of the same, along with the lunatics, assholes, dumbshits, and other colorful terms. I take it he didn't enjoy his time with them. Counted the days. He said he would have left when he hit 18. But he couldn't leave his brother. The minute the brother hit, they walked off the farm, stuck out their thumbs, and rode them back to St. Paul. He says he still remembers how his grandparents cried when they saw him and his brother at the door. Any contact with the parents? None. He said if we need anything from him to ask. He and his brother had to put it all in a box, but he'd open it up if we needed him to. This is good information. Peabody, anything nearly that interesting on the Wilkie brothers? I'm sorry to say no. Their official data's pretty straightforward, except for no medical like the others. I got more from media searches, which pretty much shows the two oldest as entitled and not really bright jerks. They both had big society weddings on the island. Both their wives are members and come from membership families. The oldest heads the Order's European HQ, based outside of London, and lives there with his family. He travels a lot. The second son heads up what's called Global Networking, is based outside of East Washington. He clearly has political ambitions, has a lot of followers on his social media rants about how our rights have been stripped away, a lot of anti-immigration, anti-gay, anti-everything, really, but his own views. Plenty of his media followers are there to punch at him, but there are plenty who agree. She glanced at her notes. They both have law degrees. But since the island's university isn't recognized by the American Bar Association, they can't practice here. Oh, and for fun, they like to hunt. They have the money and the connections to go to these preserves overseas where they can shoot genetically engineered animals. Her eyes went teary. Genetically engineered animals can still feel. They kill them, then they pose with them. Take a break. Walk around, get a fizzy. I'll walk around, get some water. When Peabody got up to go into the kitchen, Yancey turned to Eve. I'm not homicide. I like my work. That's not true, he amended. I love my work. But if and when you go to take these people down, I'd like to be part of it. Done. She got up herself, but only to walk to the board. I agree with Detective Russ, and we'll do everything we can to break this apart. But our priorities remain Ariel Byrd, Keen Grimsley, Special Agent Quirk, and Ella Fox. It's money, she said. And it's power. Protecting those. Money and power they use to spread and perpetuate an ugly vision. She heard the Geek Squad coming back and hoped McNabb's burst of laughter meant success.
We're good, McNabb announced when he pranced in. We are damn spanky good.
Data now, brag later. You'll have it. Looking pretty pleased himself, Rourke strolled over to swipe a fingertip down the shallow dent in her chin. He had his hair tied back, his sleeves rolled up. But now we've earned a beer.
We're on duty.
Are you? Rourke looked deliberately at his wrist unit. Are you really?
Your house, your case.
Feeny slid his hands in his baggy pockets. But I still outrank you.
Hell, one beer. McNabb, I want whatever you got on screen.
While he set it up, Rourke came back from the kitchen with two bottles in each hand, and Peabody, steady again, brought the other two.
Figured we'd be on this half the night.
Feeny took his beer, then a nice long pull. But not only are we damn good, but they did a half-assed job of it. Maybe three-quarter-ass job, but not a full-ass job. Figured nobody'd bother looking into it.
Why would they?
Why indeed? Rourke handed Eve her beer and rubbed an arm on her shoulder. When she had, essentially, no one.
There she is,
Yancey murmured, when Ella's ID shot popped on screen. Eve saw young, defiant, and sulky. In the official ID, her hair, a reddish-purple with bright blue streaks, exploded around that pretty young face. She had a tiny red stud on the right side of her nose, multicolored studs in her ears. Parents, Cokie Cross, deceased last February, OD, and Zeke Fox, deceased in April of 2059, shanked in prison, Florida. As you can see, Rourke began, she was tossed back and forth quite a bit in her young life. Into foster care, back to the mother, into juvie, foster, and so on. Picked up as a runaway for begging without a license.
Picking pockets at 16, Eve added.
A girl has to eat, after all. Last known address, Stone Tree House, not in Brooklyn, here in the city. It's a halfway house. Feeny took another pull. She wasn't 18 when she went in, but her caseworker signed off. It's in the data. Jane Poe, Child Services. She's got employment listed, too. Fast Break Cafe, and she graduated high school with the GED and damn good grades.
Why didn't Poe look into this when she didn't show up at the halfway house, at work?
Let's find out. Before Eve could stride to her command center, Rourke took her arm. Eve, not tonight. It's past midnight.
Crap, crap.
Okay, Peabody, get her address. We're going to take her first thing in the morning.
She's on Beach, 528 Beach, apartment 302.
Meet me there, 800 hours. Nobody filed the missing persons? Nobody looked and saw her data wiped? Why? Absently, she drank beer. They dyed her hair, took away her personality, but they didn't get her. Not all the way.
We have to get her out, Dallas.
Peabody leaned into McNabb and looked a little teary again. Tired, Eve decided. They were all tired, and burnout could follow if she didn't call it. That's the plan. It's not going to be tonight, probably not tomorrow, but we'll get her out. I need those financials, Rourke.
You'll have them. I've accumulated quite a bit already.
All right. Peabody and I will talk to Poe first thing in the morning. I need to meet with Whitney and coordinate with the feds. I have to give them what we've got. We hit Poe, and we hit Fox's last place of employment. See what we see. We'll brief by noon tomorrow. That'll include the financials. Whatever you have, send them in.
So, I'm not invited?
She'd expected that. You want to brief and be briefed, be there. Noon, unless I need to reschedule.
This was good work, everyone. Damn fucking good cop work. Now get out. Go home.
I'll get you transpo, Rourke told them. Got my own ride. Feeney handed Eve his empty bottle. You take care of the kids.
Then he lifted his chin at Ella's photo.
Reminds me of you.
Eve's jaw dropped. What? I never looked like that in my life.
It's in the eyes, kid. In the eyes that say, I'll kick your ass if I need to.
He gave her a little shoulder punch and headed out. See you at noon.
She frowned at the screen while Rourke arranged for a car and driver. And when the rest of the cops herded themselves out, she turned to Rourke.
I don't see it.
I do. He kissed her temple. And it will give me great pleasure to help get her away from there. Now come to bed, Lieutenant. You're as tired as the rest of your cops.
She let him lead her out, but couldn't let go.
Just give me some highlights on the financials so far. He spends lavishly on himself. I think many of his faithful will be disillusioned when that comes out. Fine wines, art, furnishings, the jets, the homes, and so on. And, of course, he's tucked more than a bit away in offshore accounts under assumed names. And, as I told you before, the order itself is heavily invested in property. They do make profits. The medical centers, the membership fees, merchandising.
Merchandising?
His oratories, his books, meditative music, that sort of thing.
What's he really worth?
I'll have that for you tomorrow, but I can safely say not as much as he'd have people believe.
He turned her deliberately toward the bed, where the cat opened one wary eye, then nudged her down to sit. When he bent to take off her boots, the gesture, combined with fatigue and that late-night beer, made her smile.
It's been a hell of a day. That it has.
You were right about calling it. My brain's going to mush.
Turn it off for a bit, then.
He tugged her to her feet. Easier said, she thought, but unhooked her weapon harness. By the time she'd undressed, he'd turned down the bed. When she slid into it, she felt her body go, ah.
You'll be up before dawn anyway.
Another ah as she curled into him. Organizing world domination and cop consultant duties.
Wake me up.
All right.
Sleep now.
And she did, curled between him and the cat at the small of her back until her communicator signaled. Blown fully awake, she snatched it from the bedside table.
Block video. Dallas.
Rather than the flat voice dispatch she'd expected, the voice was hesitant.
Lieutenant Dallas, this is 911 operator Harris. I realize this is irregular, but there's a woman on the line who insists on speaking only to you.
Who is it?
She won't give her name, sir, and her number's blocked. She sounds desperate. I can attempt to trace her location if you can keep her on the line.
Put her on. Rourke called for lights at 10% before he got out of bed.
Ma'am, I have Lieutenant Dallas for you.
Lieutenant?
This is Dallas.
Who's this?
Oh God, thank God. This voice wasn't hesitant. Desperate, yes, but Eve recognized terror with it.
Will you help me? Something terrible's happened. I know something terrible happened.
What happened?
I need to get away. I have a little boy, and I need to get him away. I'm pregnant. I need to get us somewhere safe. Please help me.
I will help you. She took the coffee Rourke offered. But I need to know where you are, what happened. What's your name?
You can't come here. They watch. I know they do. And I know how that sounds. I'm going to get my little boy and what I can carry and leave, but I don't have anywhere to go. I waited until all the lights were off, but I'm afraid someone will see us when I leave. I saw you today. I saw you and I recognized you and... it was like a sign. I need your help.
I'm going to help you. Are you in immediate danger?
No. My husband's not here. He's at the retreat. But Marcia, next door? They took her away. Do you have somewhere safe I can take my son?
Yes. Tell me where you are. I'll take you both somewhere safe. After a quick sob of relief, the voice rushed on.
Please don't come here. They'll know if you do, and I'm afraid they'll find me. I'm going to walk out with Gabriel. He's only 10 months old. I already packed some things, and I waited, and I'm going to carry him and get out. It's the only way, believe me.
Okay. Walk 2 blocks west. Shutting her eyes, Eve brought the Tribeca neighborhood back in her head. Then walk 1 block north. It's going to take me about 20 minutes to get to you, but I'll meet you and I'll take you to a safe place.
Thank you. Thank God.
Keep your link open. Operator Harris? Lieutenant? Stay on with the caller. Ma'am, what's your name?
I'm Zoe.
Zoe, Operator Harris will stay on. Rourke, already dressed in jeans, a thin gray sweater, brought clothes out of Eve's closet.